This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Ben.
And I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And we will be diving back into the Colleen McKernan episode with our anonymous friend, Annie, who knew both the perpetrator and the victim. And without further ado, let's dig back in. Yeah, now, did this couple have just, like, guns lying around? Because that's the only thing that strikes me as premeditative is, like, if he's like, screw this, I'm out of here. How does she have time to get a gun?
It was in the nightstand.
Okay.
Because he put her in the bedroom.
They were fighting in the bedroom. Okay.
Yeah. He had taken her and, according to her, kind of, and you'll hear it here in a few minutes because I want to play that part of the testimony too. But when you heard about him threatening to commit suicide, what did you, does that sound like him? I mean, because it sounds like he was very emotional with her. I mean, obviously, you know, he's threatening to kill himself. Did that surprise you at all?
It did. Because I didn't know about any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you go from me to, because I had left, I think, in October of that year, my situation. And so why wouldn't you have, like, called me and, like, or at least just been like, oh my God, something, you're digging on my relationship and what happened with me, but you're not willing to share that. That just doesn't sound like a typical, like, friendship. And maybe she was afraid that I would tell her to leave. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But why wouldn't you confide in anyone about this at all? A parent, someone, but you go to the vet. It just... because I just don't think it's true. I don't think that he said that. I could see him being apologetic if he did something like that, but I also don't see him trying to kill someone with a pillow. But yeah. Like I said, I mean, like, I only had a relationship with them for the length of their relationship. So they were still fresh when I met her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there could have been a completely different side that I never saw. I mean, we would hang out almost like every other weekend, but that doesn't mean that I know what's going on at home, especially if this friendship that I had created, she's not going to share.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. My only devil's advocate point to that, though, would be that if it is battered women syndrome, there's stages, and until that person gets to that final stage where they realize it's completely the fault of the abuser, they're going to do everything they can to maintain that relationship. And mm-hmm. I think most people, and it seemed like Colleen, would have been at least smart enough to realize, if I tell anyone, like a parent especially, that this dude smothered me with a pillow and revived me in the shower, this relationship's completely over because he's going to prison.
Right.
So you're saying that she's, if that happened, I mean, she obviously would no longer be in control of anything. So is that kind of the point you were making there, or just that it's more, because for me personally, I'm not saying that the abuse didn't happen. I just don't see battered syndrome with her.
I don't see battered syndrome because she was just such a very, I mean, she was in the military. She is a very, very strong-willed woman. Mm-hmm. I can't see him putting his hand on her and it being okay.
Right.
And I respect how you feel, and you definitely have closer ties to it. But again, on the stages of battered women's syndrome, the first stage is denial. And right. If you deny it to yourself, you're certainly not telling other people, because you're That's not true. Even going to acknowledge that it's occurring.
But she did say that she went over to her neighbor's house and told her neighbor, called the cops, and said, mm-hmm. this is what happened one of the times that she locked him out of the house, or that he supposedly hit her. So why are you confiding in your neighbor, but no one else? I mean, did the neighbor ever come to court? I didn't watch.
Yeah, she testified.
She testified to
basically what you just said, that Colleen had come over to her house after, I don't know if it was after he had been slamming her head into the car, or a time when he had actually hit her, and told her about it. And then they called the cops, but the cops apparently weren't going to do anything to keep him away. So she didn't file a report, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Here's a question in regard to all that, and I know the answer from what you've been telling us, but like, if she's getting hit, if she's getting her face slammed into a car, no one that you know of has ever seen her with facial injuries, right? No bruises.
No. And I mean, I feel like her work would have seen that, because that's not going to heal itself overnight. Something that traumatic. I mean, if I slammed my head into a wall right now, I'd have bruises for at least a couple of days. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah. And especially if someone else is slamming you.
I'm not a woman, so I don't have expertise in it. Annie, you have definitely some expertise in this scenario, but like makeup, like, can we cover up extreme bruising?
I'm not a makeup person, so I don't know.
Me either.
Right.
I've got the wrong two people to ask.
But you have, yeah.
I'm thinking, like, to cover up, like, your face being bashed into a car, you would need, like, I forget his first name, but Savino, who does, like, the makeup for, like, horror movies. Like, so you need an expert.
Yes.
I think it would take more than just, like, foundation and stuff to cover a serious bruise. And I don't know. It's just, the whole, I'm still iffy on the battered woman syndrome thing. I mean, Ben, you probably will disagree with me, and that's fine. I feel like
I have to say that Annie's insight into it is compelling.
However,
if you're looking at battered women syndrome and you see how the defense is able to get this pushed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's so much, like I said, the first phase, which lasts a long time, and these people weren't married long, so she would have been very much in that phase, is denial. So the fact that she's not telling anybody, for the most part, isn't a thing. It's not something that's going to make this not possible.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm going to go ahead and play this next testimony. It's about 15 minutes long. And this is her talking about the actual night that she shot him, and then we can discuss all this. And Annie, hopefully this isn't too painful for you to watch. It's it's interesting.
Okay, let's talk about New Year's Eve 2014. What did you want to do for New Year's Eve? I originally wanted, I found a Pinterest post where you like write down your hopes and your dreams for the year, and then you turn it into like next year you can look to see what you accomplished. So I wanted to do something like that. I didn't want to do that. I suggested doing like a kid party so we could have a son and other kids that were friends with their parents.
I do want to say something, because Annie, you have mentioned a couple times how she doesn't show a lot of emotion, so I can't imagine her being very sentimental.
No. Do you think
talking about putting her goals and hopes and dreams for the next year, do you think that is something she actually would have done or wanted to do?
I don't believe so. I don't think that was like, hey, on New Year's Eve, let's do this, because she was also calling me trying to get into a restaurant. So it's like, I really doubt that she went on Pinterest and was like, hey, Rob, let's write down our hopes and dreams. I don't
this disturbs me. Like, this is like the biggest incriminating piece of evidence I've seen, because you said she kind of flipped from one person to the other in your perspective. To me, right there, she just flipped into like June Cleaver. Like, this woman doesn't exist. Like, what are you doing on New Year's Eve? Look, I'm boring. I don't do shit. I'd be like, I'm sleeping, but at least that's believable. Most people would be like, I'm going out with my friends and we're going to drink and we're going to rock in the new year. Like, no one's like, well, I found this thing where I could put down my hopes and dreams. And then I thought about maybe a kid's party. It's like, no, you didn't, mother ever. Like, that's insanity.
And she loved his son, but she didn't love his son enough to like not drink on New Year's Eve.
I was actually just going to ask you that. How actually was her relationship with his son?
I think she loved him. I don't think that it was a, oh my gosh, let's have him all the time type of love.
Okay.
And how was Rom's relationship with his son?
Oh, he loved him. He loved him 100%. Like, you could just tell when they were hanging out.
Was it joint visitation between?
I think that it was like every other weekend type deal.
Okay.
I don't think that it was.
He was regularly in his life.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I
said no. So I ended up compromising and we did what Rob wanted to do.
And what did Rob want to do?
He wanted to go over to his friend Brittany and Zach's house.
Pause. Sorry, I just want to say on this part, like, it's like, just tell what you wanted to do on effing New Year's. Tell what you did on New Year's. But she's got to take a stab at him. So we ended up doing what Rob wanted to do. And what did Rob want to do? He wanted to go to his friends. Like, why do we got to take a stab at him? Why are we really driving in the fact that she's trying to make it look like he's controlling her?
Oh, well, yeah.
Plays to the abuse.
Right. It does. And I get that. But it doesn't seem believable on stand. It would be way more believable if she's like, well, I wanted to do this, but then Rob wanted to do that. We ended up doing that, right? But she's going to make it like, we did what he wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, sometimes less information means more.
But Annie, you said that it's the exact opposite. You know, it's what she wants, and that's that.
Oh, 100%. But I could see him saying, you know, I really want to go over there. Let's go over there and then we'll compromise, because they were going over there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what she told me New Year's Eve, that we're going over to our friend's house and then we'll be home. So I don't really even feel like it was them debating on what they were supposed to do. I think that they were planning, both of them, on going over there after they went out for a nice meal together.
Right. So in reality, instead of this being like,
he got his way again because he's controlling me, which is what she really wants everyone to believe, it was probably just a couple kind of like going over back and forth of what they wanted their plans to be for the night.
Yes. I believe that more.
Did you know Brittany and Zach? Did you hang out with them?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
Who was the, was Zach wasn't the one that showed up right, like 7 minutes later, right?
No.
So the fight was bad enough that one of their friends followed them home.
Well, I think she'll talk about it. But I think Brittany was the one who, because Colin was screaming at him, was like, you know, take it down or you guys need
to leave. And then they ended up leaving. Actually, I think that's getting ready to come up too.
Okay.
So let's start. Did you work New Year's Eve?
Yes, I worked that day. And he ended up dropping me off because we were going to try and go out to dinner right after work. But that never happened.
So what's the first thing that you did that evening?
So they didn't go out to dinner because you couldn't get them into your restaurant? Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah. Like, how do you expect to get in on New Year's Eve to a restaurant?
Right.
Sorry.
Okay.
We went back to the house. We took care of the animals. Rob showered. And we ended up going to the kennel bar. after the chemical procedure. After the chemical, then we went to Zach and Brittany's. And time frame, just for the jury, what time approximately was that? We went to the Kendall's around 7, and then maybe got to Zach and Brittany's around 8. And when you were leaving that evening to head to the Kendall, did you see your neighbor? Yes, right outside we saw Mike and Abby, and I told them that we'd be bringing in the new year with them later that night. So now from the...
So who are Mike and Abby?
So Mike lived across the street and Abby was his girlfriend at the time. And I mean, I've talked to Mike about it because Mike and I were friends. So he said that he heard what he thought was fireworks that night.
He also sounded like somebody banging on a door or something like that.
But he didn't. Yes. He didn't register gunshots.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I never thought of that, but given that this is New Year's Eve,
well, yeah,
everyone's going to think shootings are fireworks, right? So
that's like a
yeah.
Oh, well, that's kind of playing into premeditation, which I don't think happened, but right. That'd be good for it.
But like Rob used to go to Mike's to do coke.
That was another huge thing. Hmm.
Like Mike wasn't doing it, but Rob would go over there and do it.
Just to have a place to do it because she wouldn't let him there.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, it's the weird thing about watching this is because, like I said, if I were on any of these juries, I think I would have a hard time convicting her, just to be honest. Because I do, like I said, I really do think that there was abuse and I do think she just snapped. But it's hard to watch her because just the emotions, I don't believe the shit she's trying to put it forth. I believe what she's saying. I just don't believe what she's trying to act like she's feeling about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I also believe there was some abuse,
and I do believe that she snapped. But I'm sure we'll get to that part later. I don't know if that correlates into a mere 3.5 years in jail.
You know, it's supposed to be 7, which is still low.
Right, yeah. But it ends up being 3.5.
Well, I think it was what time served. She was 2 years on house arrest, which house arrest for someone that murdered someone is unheard of.
Yeah. That's like when you're sick from work. You might get bored with that Netflix, but it's not a bad life.
Yeah, way to put that in perspective there, Ben.
I'm just
thinking of when I had COVID twice. It was kind of like house arrest.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Kendall, you end up going to Brittany and Zach.
Yes.
And do you recall approximately what time you went to that party?
Probably around 8 o'clock.
And what did you do there?
Just sat down, hung out, and Mitch was there. Rob was there, obviously, and just kind of hung out and I played with their puppy.
Did you know many of the people there at the party?
No, I'd only met them once before.
Now this part, what we were going back saying, she kind of just enveloped Rob's friends. Does this sound normal? Like she wouldn't have known the people at this party?
I don't know who Brittany is, so I could see her possibly not knowing. Because, I mean, I can't for the life of me remember his best friend's name. Okay. So maybe if it comes up, I'll tell you. And maybe it was more his friends than Rob's friends, maybe Brittany and Zach or whatever.
Okay.
But I don't remember them.
To me, it kind of sounds like, which obviously is just speculation,
but that like this was a couple trying to figure out what to do and their plans kind of fell through. So I could see it being like the party of like a friend because they kind of weren't able to do the things they were going to do.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I know she wanted to go out to dinner and that's all, like, that's what she kept saying, that she wanted to go out to dinner, just the two of them, but she couldn't find anywhere to go, so that's why they ended up at the Kendall.
Okay.
And at some point in time, you left the party.
Yes, Rod wanted to go to Tucker's bar, so four of us went there.
Did Rod tell you why he wanted to go to Tucker's?
Well, he just, that's how he was. He'd always want to, you know, bar hop or go from place to place.
And you could walk there?
Yes, it was very, very close.
To Rocky that evening?
No, we had agreed on taking out $100 for the night, but he never told me he was going to be giving that to Rocky.
And after this particular photograph, did you have any discussions with Rob later on in that evening about any money he had given to Rob?
No, I didn't know what happened.
Do you think that's true? That she didn't know what happened since she was like kind of the keeper of the purse strings?
I could see her, like, I could see her saying, here's $100 to make him feel like he is the man. In the relationship, you know, and maybe her being like, so you're gonna pay for all of our drinks for the rest of the night, and then him spending it on something that he wasn't supposed to. I could totally see that.
Okay.
Yeah, but her like ignorance to it, like it almost seems like that's a possibility of the catalyst for the fight, right? Which I think is what they're kind of assuming or insinuating
in the question.
Yes. It just, yeah. I mean, in the video of him at that bar, though,
mm-hmm.
you can clearly see that he had his wedding ring on.
Yeah.
So I just want you to take a look at that.
Why, his, when he was deceased, his, like, when he didn't have a ring on?
Correct. It was in the drawer in the kitchen.
Gotcha. So he might have tried to leave, said, this is over, put the ring away.
Correct. That's what my thoughts were.
This is some of the same photograph. Pauline, do you know where you were in the bar that evening when this exchange took place?
When I first came into the bar, I went to the bathroom, into one stall, so I was waiting for another woman to use it. So I think that's where I was.
Again, close to the same photograph that we've seen.
Yes.
Can you describe Rob's wedding ring?
Sure. His wedding ring was made out of titanium. It was black. It was pretty thick band. So you would be able to see it in Tucker's video.
But yes, sustained. Ladies and gentlemen, you will disregard that last statement.
Pauline, was Rob wearing his wedding ring on New Year's Eve?
No, he actually had lost it about 3 days prior to that. And we had gone through the house looking for it. And it was never found. He had to take it on and off for safety reasons for work.
What do you think about that statement there, Annie?
I'm just telling you, like, I watched that video over and over. I think it was of him at the bar at Kendall's. Yeah. And I'm telling you what, like, I swear to you that he had it on. And I know that that was controversial at the beginning, but I think that they got rid of that later on. Like, they're like, we're not even going to talk about the wedding ring anymore.
Yeah, I think they actually had a sidebar and it was like, kaput. Because Kelly, I believe she was one who testified seeing it before. So I can't even remember what the context of it was. But yeah, the ring was a big thing for a while. And I never really understood why, except to the point of, well, okay, maybe he did take it off because he was leaving her, like what Ben had said a few minutes ago.
Right. Yeah,
it's interesting, too, though, that like she's saying that it was lost days prior and then they find it in the nightstand. Like, that's not lost. That's set aside.
Yeah.
Right. And that was my whole thought is like, okay, so was he leaving you? He took it off and you got pissed. And that's where everything happened. Because she was controlling. So I could see it being like a huge thing. And I can't believe that she would allow him outside of the house without a ring on. Or something that signified them being married.
Yeah, if she was controlling, that's kind of like a big piece of, okay, well, you're going to wear that because you belong
to me.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, why even lie about it anyway since there's pictures?
Right.
And video.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only reason she has to lie about it is if you think about it, if you say, like, I was dissociated and I like didn't even know what I was doing. And then you say, prior to that, though, he took off his ring and threatened to leave me, right? That's a problem. Like, I almost am like, why wasn't she smart enough to put this ring back on this man's finger?
Good question.
If she took it off to begin with, I mean, you know, we don't know.
I think he took it off, but I'm saying she should have put it back on and been like, we weren't even fighting until like right before it happened, right? But the fact that he might have taken it off and it looks a lot like it with the fact that he's wearing it in the video shows that they probably had this ongoing fight.
How long approximately were you at Tucker's?
Not very long, probably half an hour.
And you heard Mitch testify about these warm apple pie shots.
Yes.
Did you have any of those shots?
Yes, I mean, I didn't recall until I saw the video, but I did have four of them.
And how did you feel after those shots?
I mean, they're not very potent, shots, so I mean, I would say I was tipsy.
What did you do after you left Tucker's?
We ended up walking right back to Zach and Brittany's house.
And then once you got back to Zach and Brittany's, what happened?
We had discussed like getting a cab, and we were supposed to call a cab that night. And I, you know, wanted to leave. I wanted to go over to Mike and Abby's, our neighbors, like we'd agreed upon. So Rob and I were kind of in a disagreement about that.
Did you discuss how much money was left from the $100 that you had?
But I'd asked them where it all gone. I was like, I don't understand. If you know, only had these couple of drinks, I didn't understand where the money went.
And then once you were back at Zach and Brittany's, what happened?
When we were back there, I wanted to get a cab. I wanted to leave, and that's when I caught Rob doing drugs in the back of the house, and I confronted him about it and asked him what it was, and I didn't know that he was doing them, and so I was in shock. His friends were laughing; they thought it was funny. And I asked them what it was, and nobody would tell me what it was. So, you know, and Brittany ended up coming out because I was loud and I was upset. And she asked us to be quieter to leave, so I left.
Can you describe for us exactly what you saw when you walked out onto the patio?
Well, Rob had a line of drugs in front of him, and he was bent over with, you know, a straw up his nose about to snort cocaine or the substance in front of him.
You said you were loud.
Yes.
Do you recall what you were saying?
I was asking what it was. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? Those are the types of questions I was asking.
And what happened once Brittany came out and said, "You're being too loud"?
Well, I stopped and, you know, I said, you know, I was embarrassed. I said, I'm sorry, you know, this isn't my fault. And I left.
And when you say you left, how did you leave through the house?
I had to walk through the whole house, say goodbye and walked out the front door.
And what did Rob do?
He followed right behind me.
Did you have any discussion with Rob then outside of the house?
We did. I wanted to leave. I wanted to separate from Rob, and I wanted to go to my girlfriend Kelly's house. And he was like, "No, I'm not going to that whore's house." And you know, I'm like, "Okay, fine, calm down. I didn't want to make any more of a scene than
Pause.
we already had." And so.
So I can't see Rob calling Kelly a whore, first of all. And because they were so close. And for her to have to bring that into this, she didn't have to say that. She could have said, no, we don't need to go to Kelly's house. But she had to sit there, and because Kelly created like this Facebook page about like people being against Colleen.
Oh.
So it was on Facebook, and she was like the biggest advocate of, like, I mean, and you can tell when she testifies, like, she was not a fan. So for her to sit there and say, my best friend Kelly, and then have to interject that Rob called her a whore, like, that was
Personally.
more of her being like, F you, Kelly, than that everyone needs to know how he felt about Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I kind of understand her being pissed off if they were best friends, but it's just like, I mean, I get because you had said that you thought Kelly and Rob were actually closer than Colleen and Kelly were. Okay. You know, I mean, obviously, because Kelly's testimony was it was scathing. There's definitely no love lost there.
Between the two
No.
them.
So
Yeah.
yeah, it
It was
I think I agree with you on that.
right in the beginning of this clip too. I just want to point out one thing when she's trying to show the world that she wasn't drunk, she's like full control of her capacities.
Tipsy.
She said she didn't remember taking the apple pie shot, but because of the video, she had four of them. But they weren't that potent. You don't forget taking four shots unless you're effed up. So either you were too effed up to remember or you lied about the shots. But let's not go to they weren't that strong, but I don't remember taking four shots.
Well, but I mean, too, if she did dissociate, I mean, you gotta keep in mind the lack of memory or false memories that come
Well,
in
yeah, but
too,
the
so.
dissociation would be during the incident. It wouldn't be an off and on thing happening throughout her day. Like it would have been from the trauma of the fight. She would have lost control and lost connection to reality. Like
Well, yeah, I
if she
know, but I
lost
mean,
connection during this night, she's drunk.
well, you know damn well they both were.
Oh,
I mean,
Yeah,
if he,
for sure. I mean, that's the thing is, I get it. That I get it. Like what you were saying earlier about like when I was saying something, you said, well, that's because they're trying to show about the abuse. Like, I get it. I get what the defense is trying to do, but I'm saying it's super obvious what the defense is trying to do. But it's almost more stupid to be like, I'm out partying with my boyfriend on New Year's Eve, and I was not drunk at all.
Well, she didn't say not drunk at all. She said tipsy.
She said she was only a little tipsy because
Yeah.
she had these four shots, but we assume she was drinking other drinks prior to that, right? We're just talking about the apple pie shots.
Oh, no. She was playing with a puppy.
Right. And she's got to say shit
Yeah.
like that. Where I was playing with a puppy, and then didn't she say she was like looking into getting a kitten? Like, this lady is June fucking Cleaver. She loves kids, she loves animals. She's not trying to do
No, she
anything.
said they're trying to get a cab.
Oh, a cab. I thought she said a cat.
Okay.
No.
Fair enough.
Ben, you're special.
So Uber wasn't rocking in 2014, apparently, because I don't know who drives cabs, but
God.
Oh my gosh. Or cats.
Yeah.
is
Finally, I
weird.
was like, okay. He's like, we'll just go to Mike and Abby's, and I agreed. Okay, let's just salvage, and I don't want to fight anymore. When you say you agreed and wanted to salvage the night, were you angry?
Oh, no, I wanted to have a good New Year's overall.
Did you voluntarily get into the car?
Yes, I got into the car.
Okay, you weren't forced to get in.
I just walked over and he opened the door for me.
What happened once you and Rob got into the vehicle?
He got into the car. I buckled my seatbelt, and when he got in, he turned on the car. He peeled out, and he was driving incredibly fast on a very narrow street, and I put my hands on the dashboard and said, slow down, and I'm like, he's driving like a maniac, and there's stop signs, and he's not stopping, and he's not looking, and he's screaming at me, calling me every name, C word, the B word, the W word. He's telling me that his friends hate me, that he hates me, and that I'm embarrassment. And we went from the street that we are on, and when we turned onto Lake, he didn't stop, and he went all the way into the other lane of traffic. I thought for sure we were going to get in a head-on collision. And there was no red lights, and he was honking his horn, and he swerved around people on rails.
And then we got to the house, and I was bawling, and I was crying, and I just put my head down. I'm like, okay, I'm just trying to calm down, and I started wiping my tears away from the rat. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go over to Mike and Abby's. It's going to be okay. And he got out immediately, and he comes around the other side where I am, and he opens the door, and he reaches in, and what are you doing? And he doesn't tell me to shut up. And he puts his hand over my mouth and he smashed my head against the headrest. And he unbuckled me and he rips me out of the car. And I don't have control over my body. And he overpowered me and he wrapped me up. And he takes his other hand and put it and wrenched my neck back. And he put his hand over my nose and my mouth and I couldn't breathe and carried me all the way up to the house. We get to the house and he put me down and he put me between his body and in the house, and he opened the door to let us in, and it wasn't locked, and he just shoved me in the screen, and once we got into the house, and we get in there, and I have heels on, and I'm rolling in because he shoves me up the stairs, and I kick him off, and then I try to create space between him and I, because he's right behind me, and so I run up the stairs, but there's a dog gate, and move it. And he screamed at me to go back to the bedroom. And he's right behind me and he has his hand on my neck. If I try and move, he would correct me. And I wasn't able to do anything. So we get to the bedroom and I just sit down and have my wristlet and it has my cell phone in it. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna call the cops. As soon as I get a second, I'm gonna call the cops. And he left the room. And then after that, I'm going to take my phone out, and I start putting in my passcode to try and open my phone, and he comes back immediately. Like, he just stepped out and, like, came back. He sees me with my phone, and he, like, stops and looks at me and sees me with my phone. And then he, like, comes over very fast, very direct, and grabs it, and he grabs me on my shoulders, and he, like, shakes me and screams in my face, like a lion or an animal, and he took my phone and he said, screaming, I'll give you all a reason to call the cops. And I hear him going into the kitchen, and he's walking around, and I grab my gun, and I'm like, okay, I can get out. I didn't have time for me to get out in time. I didn't want to get trapped in the house with him. And when I came out, he was already heading back to the bedroom, and he's like, where the fuck are you going? Towards the stairs, and he said, you're not going anywhere, and I ended up raising the gun, and he saw me, started screaming, back up, and did it, and he did it, so I pulled the trigger. The next thing I remember was I was trying. I was facing the back wall, and I had the gun in the back wall, and I was trying to pull the trigger, and he was laying on the ground. He was laying here, and he thought, I immediately thought, oh my God, he's on the ground, and he was no longer the man that, like, he forced me to protect myself. And I still loved him, and so I threw the gun, I didn't even know where it was, and then I searched for my phone, and I called 911, and I searched for a pulse, and I tried to do CPR, but there was blood coming out through his mouth, and it's mine.
Colin, just take a moment, and then I'm going to...
Okay.
So... Again, on the signs of abuse, like physical signs, she said at least on three portions there that she's being grabbed and shaken and gripped and carried, and we have no, like, fingerprints on her, like bruising?
No. Like, there was, I mean, even the cops have said that there didn't even look like there was a struggle inside the house.
See, that's a problem for me. If she said... I don't really remember him, like, touching me, but he was screaming at me, and I just snapped, and I dissociated. then I'm like, yeah, she's been abused so long that it doesn't matter if he touched her. But if she's saying he did all this shit to her and there's no signs of it, now you're just lying.
Yeah, well, I mean, Annie, you've been in their house, right?
Yeah.
The hallway that they're talking about that goes back to their bedroom.
Yeah.
Is it as narrow as she's trying to make it seem like there's no way she could have gotten by him at all?
Like it would 100%. Yeah, it would have been. I mean, it's a very narrow. So when you walk in, you can either go downstairs into like a secluded like basement, or you can go up the steps and you're right in that hallway right there, or you can go straight into the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was in the kitchen, she could have gone through the hallway and down the steps. But I don't know if they had put the baby gate back up. I don't know where the baby gate was, like for the dogs or whatever, because mm-hmm. they got two puppies.
Right.
So, but I just, my thing is that she was saying that he like bum rushed her in the bedroom and then all of a sudden he's in the kitchen. Well, when did he get in the kitchen? When did he leave you because he was so angry that now he's in the kitchen?
Yeah.
And then he hears you. And so he comes towards you from the kitchen. And like, I mean, she's small enough that she could have ran and like gotten away from him. And she's strong enough. I feel like she was a very strong individual. And I mean, yes, he was larger than her, but not by much.
And from her account, she's less intoxicated than him, right? So.
Right. So you could have been smarter. Yeah.
Well, do you think she was just kind of at that terrified state of mind because of the fact that, number one, she knew he was an alcoholic or he was drunk, and from her testimony, all her prior abuses happen when he was drinking.
Right.
And also
on top of, you know, her thinking that he had done some type of drug that night.
She could have been completely terrified and I would not have blamed her, but she was still thinking like military.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I do believe that she probably unloaded the clip because she felt like she was in danger, possibly.
Okay.
Military wise, they train you like you don't just shoot once, you shoot to kill. So yeah. I do respect that part. But I just don't respect the fact that she said that he was coming at her. Okay. I feel like he was walking away from the bedroom. And that's when she grabbed her gun because she was over it. And I mean, I don't know if he hit her. I don't know what to believe. That's always been like in the back of my mind. I don't know what to believe because I just feel like whoever this person is that's on the stand, that's not her.
Okay.
I
can see that because I don't really feel like her emotions are genuine. And not saying that I don't believe what she's saying. I just, like I said, I don't believe what she's trying to emote outwards towards people. But with you being friends with him and hanging out with him like every other weekend and stuff like that, I'm sure have seen Rob in an inebriated state, right?
Right.
I mean, what's his manners like?
I mean, that's when he and I would get like, we would break things down and get emotional and like, I felt like he was more vulnerable when he was drunk. If anything, I really never saw the side of anger that is being portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
But that could have, I mean, I don't know. He could have been putting on like a persona for me and everybody else. And he could have been like a completely, Jekyll and Hyde situation. Like, I don't know. But all I do know is I don't feel like this emotional Colleen who's kind of like putting her hand on her face to like, I just feel like, are you trying to force out tears so that we believe it?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, as far as, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde personas, now you said you were in an abusive relationship.
Yes.
How was your boyfriend? Did he do the Jekyll and Hyde thing? I mean, was he one way in front of other people and then just, you know, when it was the two of you?
Oh, no. It didn't matter where we were. Oh. We had like a party at our house, and I told him, I'm like, look, it's getting late. I want to say it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was like, it's getting late. It's kind of like, it's time to shut it down. If people need to stay, they can stay on the couch or whatever, but like, we should go to bed. And he completely cussed me out, called me every single name in the book in front of everyone. It was very embarrassing. And I mean, he wanted his keys on Erie Street in Maslin, and he started choking me because I wouldn't give them to him, because I was like, look, you've been drinking. I don't think that it is appropriate. That was the first time and the last time that he put his hands on me. But like, I mean, a man stopped in the middle of the street and was like, are you okay, miss? And I was like, just get him away from me. And I walked to my mom's, because she was out of town, thank God. And so I like ended up staying there. And then but he wasn't afraid to show that side.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's interesting, because like, that's how I would assume most cases would be. But then on the flip side, nobody thought Ted Bundy was aggressive or angry.
And he
brutally murdered tons of people, right? So
yeah, it's just, I don't know, because it's hard to really say anything, because I don't know these people personally like you do. So that's why it's so fascinating to hear, you know, your thoughts on the persona she's playing up on the stand and the person she was with you.
Right.
And I mean, how do you feel about her now? Like, when you think about it now?
I just, anger, a lot of anger, just because I mean, she asked me for, this is, I think, what sealed the deal for me, is she asked me for my address because she wanted to write me a letter.
Okay.
Well, so all of a sudden, I got this letter in the mail. And don't you know that all the letter was a letter that she probably sent to like 15, 16, 20, who knows how many other people, asking for money for her appeal.
Oh.
So because she ran out of the funds, like she couldn't pay for her appeal, which I mean, eventually I think they ended up paying for it. But after the first time, she had an appeal or whatever, and then she was begging people for money. And that right there disgusted me so much that I was like, I am one of those people. Like, I thought this whole entire time that there's something fishy about this whole entire situation. Mm-hmm. But getting that letter in the mail made me, like, it sealed the deal for me. There's something fishy. I don't agree with this.
Yeah, so you're expecting she's reaching out to say, look, I know I messed up, but
I was being abused and I value
our friendship. And it's just this like group letter, no personal shit, send me some cash for my people. Like, why would she do that, given the fact that you already told her you never told me about this abuse? Like, you're clearly not her ally.
Right. And I mean, I was team Colleen for a while, because I was like, you're not going to lie about something like that. Like, why would you lie about something? But then when she started pressing me and making me feel like I was lying about not knowing these things.
Oh, yeah.
That's when I was kind of like, and then you asked me for my address, and I'm thinking like, you're going to send me a letter of like explanation or like something to like give me closure, whatever. And you send me something that you probably sent to like 50 other people begging for money. I'm like, this is not a GoFundMe situation.
So that's interesting because my initial take from your perspective was that you were completely team Rob and that this person's this bad person. So it's interesting to me that you actually did believe what she said. It was the fact that she's then sort of kind of trying to manipulate your brain into lying for her that you're like, never mind.
Oh yeah, I mean, I would have never gone to visit her if I was like, I wanted explanation.
Yeah.
And I mean, right now in 2023, yeah, totally team Rob. But at the very, very beginning, I was like, please let her know that I support her and that if something was going on, like whatever. But then sitting with her, talking to her on the phone, this, that, and the other, and like hearing her try and, because I mean, I'm gullible. I'm very gullible. Like I believe the best in everyone. I trust like way too often back then. Back then, I trusted way too often. So I trusted her words. But when she, I had to like pick every little piece out of our conversations in order for myself to realize that I was being manipulated by her. And I think that that's what crushed me the most. And I still didn't want to believe it. But then when I got this GoFundMe letter, which is what I'm going to call it now, that's when I was like, you know what? We're not friends. You just want out of this situation that you created for yourself. And I'm not going to be your ticket to do it.
Did you and Kelly ever have conversations about her in this whole situation?
No.
Did you even know Kelly like that?
Yes, I mean, I had gone to Kelly's house multiple times because they held like a surprise birthday party over there for Rob one time. And so I had been over there and like I met her and I thought that she was nice, but I mean, we didn't have a full-blown relationship or anything like that. Like I didn't have a phone number.
Now, to this day, has Colleen ever, I mean, since she's out of prison now, I mean, has she reached out to you or at all?
Oh, no. I
So
told
she's.
her, we had a conversation about how I did not appreciate her trying to feed lies about me and that I would never sit up on a stand for her.
What did
And
she
that
say
was
to
the
that?
last time we spoke. Huh?
Did she, what, like, what, how does she reply to that?
She was like, I don't understand what you're talking about. Very aggressive. Because I mean, she was like, I never did that. I never did that. And I'm like, that's exactly what you're doing. You had your lawyer call me and ask me specific questions, and I'm telling you my answers, and you don't like my answers. So what are we doing here? And that was pretty much it. That was the end of it. I'd never heard from her again, and I never reached out to her. I think I actually blocked her.
Yeah.
Oh,
That's
really?
interesting because, like, I would think that she would just give her lawyer like a list of people who might have insight into the abuse, and then they would call you and be like, "Hey, did th this person ever confide in you about this?" But you're saying there were specific questions where clearly she said, "I told Annie this and asked her about that," and it was just made up stuff.
Yes. I felt that it was made up because I had never heard it. It might be legit. She might have literally gotten abused and never told me anything, but I am not a fan of the way that she tried to manipulate me.
No, I mean, yeah, I totally understand that point completely. That, well, I mean, a lot of people have said, you know, even from the time she got to the police station, that she was setting up her.
Defense as she went
Oh,
along.
yeah. Did you see the video of her in the jail cell?
When she had on the black and white stripes, she was like screaming.
She was screaming. She was crying. She was like laughing at one point. She was clearly very intoxicated, and you could tell. I don't know if there's still footage of that, but
Well, they showed some of it during the trial.
okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it
That
was.
was.
She was initially arrested.
Yes.
Okay.
It was not. You could tell that she was talking to herself. She was very, very drunk. And I mean, raging. For her to say that she was only tipsy.
Oh yeah, no.
Was a complete understatement.
Yeah, no. I mean, there was some quality rage she had going on in that jail.
She said apple pie shots are not that potent, so I think that you're wrong.
Ben, yeah. Yeah, but I love you.
Yeah, that I did. I think actually that was part of the prosecution's closing statement as they played that, you know, for the jury to see. But yeah, she there's no way she was just tipsy. And she, like I said, she had some quality rage going on, which, you know, going back and thinking about that, it's kind of like, was she dissociated during that time?
That's actually a fair question now, because I'm thinking, you know what else causes memory loss?
Alcohol.
Extreme alcohol usage. She could have very clearly woken up the next day and been like, I don't know what the F happened. However, that doesn't mean she dissociated because of battered women syndrome.
Talking about this just brings up like so many different like levels of pain and anger and whatever. Yeah. But I mean, I didn't think that she was malicious at the beginning until everything, but watching her and knowing how I felt about her at the very beginning of our relationship, where I was kind of like, you know what, this gives me bad vibes. Like, she's got bad vibes written all over her. She's very controlling. She's very this, she's very that. Do I think that she knew exactly what she was doing when she shot him? Possibly not, because she was drunk. And I've seen the girl drunk. That girl was beyond drunk.
Mm-hmm.
After she shot that gun, do I feel like she knew what she was doing? Possibly a little bit, because I mean, that's a completely different type of adrenaline.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know. I go back and forth with my detest of the whole entire, like, did she know what she was doing? Was she a battered woman? Was she this? Was she that? Did she have PTSD from being in Afghanistan? Like, there's so many different things that go through your brain, especially because I knew her.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, just listening to you talk about her, it makes me kind of go back and forth with like, well, was she really dissociated when she was doing this? And she really had no control over what the hell was happening? And, or, you know, is she just using that as a defense to keep from getting a longer sentence, which 7 years, I mean, honestly, is a gift.
Oh, and she's already out.
Yeah, she only had to serve 3.5. Yeah, that's crazy.
Right.
Absolutely crazy.
But the doctor...
So my question is this. Had she not been drinking, would this have happened?
I don't think so.
I don't either. That's
why I'm like, maybe you can't say it's battered women's syndrome, because if she hadn't been drinking, this wouldn't have occurred.
Well, and that's kind of what I've said from the start. I really don't think she had battered woman's syndrome. I'm not saying that there wasn't abuse, because I mean, there is a part of me that does believe her on that maybe he did abuse her. And... you know, the alcohol really helped to dull down that part of her. It was like, well, I don't fucking care if he dies or not. I'm taking back my power, and, you know, you're not going to tell me what to do type of thing, or you're not going to leave me. And
oh yeah.
If she even had that wherewithal, because I mean, I haven't drank in a long, long time, like decades in any sort of major capacity. So I could say this now, but I mean, in my 20s, early 30s, there were definitely nights I don't remember, right? So I don't know if I had the wherewithal to remember things I did. Thank God I didn't wake up
in prison or in a crime scene, but
yeah. You know, I mean, she could have just been blacked out drunk, doesn't even know what happened, but that's not a defense.
Well,
no, but I don't understand why the alcohol, like, why wasn't her alcohol level taken at the jail? Was it ever? Do you know?
I don't think they did. I'm not even sure they administered a breathalyzer to her, to be honest.
Which, like, I haven't come across anything that
tells what her blood alcohol level was for the night. Because we know his was way over the limit.
Yeah, that's nuts because it's not like this is a situation where we're questioning whether or not she did it. We know she did it, so she should be the one they're looking at first.
Oh, honestly, I think on the police officer side, I don't think they did a very good job like sussing out, because there's so many questions about the crime scene itself. You know, they go back and forth with where the shell casings were, you know, and they talk about how he was using drugs, but there were no drugs found in his system when they did the autopsy. You know, he was very drunk, but you know, there were just I just think there was a lot of things that they missed. And like I said, I can't recall coming across anything that shows they administered any kind of breathalyzer test for her, which clearly they needed to, because I mean, just watching the video,
Yeah,
it's obvious she's not.
I would find it hard to believe that they didn't, but I don't know why that information's not easily to find. And if they didn't, then I think that's major neglect of the investigation.
Yeah. And I think we are at another good stopping point to end part two of our Colleen McKernan episode. So thanks as always for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And if you want to get in contact with us, all of our social media links are on www.throughtheabysspodcast.com. We also have a YouTube channel. There's not much on it right now. I think I have three videos up right now, but they're really good videos. I highly suggest going and watching, and also to like and subscribe, because that's very important. But yeah, thank you. See you next week.
Peace.
Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff.